Good evening, everybody, and welcome to the continuation of the Tuesday Night Theater by Robert Feldman. This week's cheer is sponsored by Rachel and Alan Friedman and family, and the 50 yard play of Rachel's father, Robert Baruch Rabinowitz, Harav Baruch Meir, Ben Harav Gedalia Aaron. And again, the Shiurim Hashem will be Tuesday nights at this time, 8:30. Without anything further, thank you.
As I was saying, I kind of totally lost track of what we've spoken about and we haven't spoken about, so I hopefully will be able with SCG to go through and figure it out a little bit. I think one topic that we think haven't spoken about, and this is related to last week's parsha, is the topic of Bas V'Cholov, Bishul Bas V'Cholov. Okay. So that's a topic that's relevant to three parshas. So there are three places in the Torah. The Torah tells us of the Basel Gedi B'Chalei Mo, should not cook a kid in its mother's milk. And the Gemara understands that that refers to three prohibitions. Three prohibitions connected to Bas V'Cholov. We are forbidden to eat Bas V'Cholov. But more than a standard eating prohibition, we're also prohibited to benefit, which goes further than most other prohibitions of eating. And we're also prohibited to cook, to create that combination, to put together Bas V'Cholov in a heat-based cooking combination. That's its own prohibition. So I'd like to focus on that a little bit, talk a little bit about that specific prohibition. And it's an interesting idea that are related to it. The Ketzef Mishnah in the beginning of Hilchos Tumas Meis suggests that the prohibition of Bishul Bas V'Cholov is actually a concept you've probably referred to a couple of times in the past, what you might call a Gezeirah D'Oraisa, a Siag D'Oraisa. I'm pretty sure we have touched on this point in the past, that normally we relate to Dinim D'Rabbanan, the relationship between D'Oraisa and D'Rabbanan, that we have Dinim in the Torah, and then there are Dinim D'Rabbanan which often come to protect the Dinim in the Torah, which is, by the way, is coming, which applies to the Pais Sultan. That's a topic in that Pais, I think a topic we did speak about last year. So normally that's a relationship, that the D'Rabbanan come to protect the Dinim D'Rabbanan. But occasionally you'll have a situation where you'll have a Din in the Torah, and even though it's a Din in the Torah itself, it's really coming to protect another Din in the Torah. That's a topic that was made popular by Joseph Engel. Joseph Engel, in his essays in the paper Lech Ha'Tov, he has a discussion there where he begins by asking, "Ima Shinu Siag D'Oraisa, have you ever found a Siag that's actually from the Torah? It's not a rabbinical enactment?" And he says, yeah, thinking about it, he can think of about 18, 19 examples off the top of his head. And other forums that have other lists, you put together all the lists and you cross out all the overlaps, you got about 35, 40 examples. Each one is only according to one opinion and another opinion. You have to take different suggestions that you find in Rishonim. So among the list of Engel's lists is this, that the Ketzef Mishnah writes that really the Torah is not really focused on Bishul Bas V'Cholov. Really the Torah doesn't want us to eat Bas V'Cholov. But it's a valid concern if we're going to come to make this combination, if we're going to cook Bas V'Cholov, so that's going to put us at risk of eating it. Why are we going to cook it if we're not going to at least be considering eating it? So therefore, to protect us from the issue of eating it, the Torah says don't even cook it. Therefore, the issue of Bishul Bas V'Cholov, the Tesmissa suggests, is actually a siag for eating Bas V'Cholov. Not everyone agrees. Some Achronim will point to the fact that the Gemara seems to sound differently, because the Gemara has an expression in the middle of Parak Kalabasa, a little circle, a couple of ages, the Torah, Kol Shetiavti Lecha Harehu Bal Torcho. Anything that I have told you is a Pareva, so there is a status of don't eat. So that seems to indicate, not to mention the reference to Basa B'Cholov, that Basa B'Cholov itself is a Toreva, this creation is a Toreva, and since it's a Toreva, we're not supposed to eat it. So it sounds like the controlling issue is the issue of Bishul, and as a consequence of that, we're not supposed to eat it. Which is the opposite of what the Ketzef Mishnah is saying, that really the real issue is eating, and since we don't want to come to eat, so we're not supposed to cook. So basically, two opposite perspectives. We're really interested, we're really negatively interested in eating, and we don't cook for that reason, or we're negatively interested in the creation itself, and once it's created there, so we don't eat it. And in fact, the truth is, the prophet appears to be fine, does focus on the word bitulo, tobacco. So some suggest that usage may suggest that really is the core issue. So that's the question. So does it make a difference if you assume that the ifr bitul is only because of potential akhila? Does that affect halacha at all? So you might say no. You might say, who cares? All right, so you're going to say that in theory it's there as a siyag. But at the end of the day, it's an ifr deraisa. It's an ifr deraisa, so we have to treat it like an independent ifr. It's a very logical position. It's one that's espoused by the Tzibbut Chazon Nachum, among others. The Chazon Nachum was the brother of the Tzibbut Arav. 50 years ago in Eretz Yisrael, so the Tzibbut Arav was a major figure in Eretz Yisrael. And he's the author of the Tzibbut Dovid Nesarim, the Dovid Arav Wiedenfeld. So his brother, Nachum, was Tzibbut Chazon Nachum. So in the Tzibbut Chazon Nachum, he has an essay about this topic at one place. And he says, well, nice, it doesn't make a difference. It doesn't make a difference. And it's once it's a yisra, and I told you anyway, so we treat it like a full-fledged yisra. We're not going to have any impact, any ramifications come out of this detail. However, as we'll see, there were many who suggested that it might make a difference. So we're going to discuss some of the possible differences that have been suggested, even though the Chazon Nachum's statement, again, is logical. Once it's an yisra, I told you, it does make sense to say that we don't have the right to distinguish. But others apparently considered other possibilities. Among them, the Sechem had caused an opinion. So yeah, I don't know if anyone would go so far as to endorse this practically. But the Chachamim quotes an opinion that if you have somebody who's working for a non-Jew, who's working as a cook for a non-Jew, and he's not going to be allowed to eat anything that he cooks, and therefore he knows that's the case, he has to create the food and he's not going to be able to eat any of it, so maybe such a person could be permitted to cook Basa B'Chalav, knowing that it's not going to be possible for him to eat it. Again, that's, I don't know, again, how many modern posts would necessarily endorse such a conclusion, but at least it's suggested or the quotation in the Sechem. And that's one, perhaps, possible ramification of taking this idea all the way to a conclusion that maybe if it's not going to be permitted for you to eat it because it's not your food and the owner's not going to allow it, so then maybe... Oh, so is that not a hana issue if you're making your living out of it? That's a good question. Why is that not called you're getting hana? Maybe if you're a slave and you have no choice, it's not any hana. I don't know. Free question why that's not called hana. It's not exactly the same thing.
Why does it have to hear that?
As opposed to...
You
know, why mention his mother's name? Right, that's a good question as far as how the drasha works. That's a little bit beyond our focus there. We're going to focus on this aspect of this. But there's a lot of good questions you could ask about how the drasha works. I think it's going to be beyond our focus tonight a little bit. But another interesting point that could possibly come out of the whole Gezeira question is like this. There is a statement that Prima Gaudin has. This is a very big shidduch, very controversial point. The Prima Gaudin, an important commentary to Shulchan Aruch, says like this. A Nazir is not allowed to drink wine. And the Torah says not only wine, but also all the other wine-related foods, such as the grapes, a Nazir is not allowed to eat that either. The Medrash seems to suggest that really the Torah doesn't care to prohibit the Nazir from eating grapes. So really, what's special about grapes? Really, the idea is another shouldn't drink wine, and grapes could lead to wine. In other words, and as Rav Yosef Engel does count in his list, this may be another example of a siyag d'oraisa, a case where the Torah itself is imposing a din, but it's really a protective din for another din in the Torah. Another eating grapes is there to stop another from eating wine, from drinking wine. Now, we discussed last year, right? I think we assume that we can relate to at least the concept, and we assume that the wine is an idea of not giving oneself over to intoxicating forces, and even though it includes these elements that are not intoxicating, so that's what this measure is suggesting, that really our concern is the intoxicating elements, but these other aspects are there to keep us even further away from them. That's the way medicine is handled. You could. That's also somehow in the field. Yeah, we could go into a focus on that. I just want to address the elements because it's relevant to this. So maybe. Right, so I think we'll assume for now that it is, and that these elements that don't go with intoxication are really there to keep us one step further away from intoxication. Now, we discussed last year the concept of chashi shir, that even though the Torah usually has a shir that's relevant for certain punishments, you have to eat a kedayis of traces, for example, in order to get malchus. Nonetheless, less than a shir is also min ha-Torah, the way we assume. Now, some Achronim understand that to be also a siag min ha-Torah. That really the issue only applies a kezayis and up, but we don't want you to violate a whole issue, so we say don't have even a little bit. So Prima Gadim comes up with an interesting shiddush. That maybe we should say that a nazir is committed to eat a chashi shir of grapes. We can eat a little bite of grapes, because grapes is a gzeirah, and chashi shir is a gzeirah, so therefore that's two gzeirahs together, and we have a rule, ein gozer and gzeirah le gzeirah. We don't combine gzeirahs. That's how the Prima Gadim assumes. So I would have thought that only applies me to Rabbanan. That's a very surprising element of Prima Gadim, and it's just Mengel himself expresses that astonishment at the Prima Gadim's conclusion. I would have thought that that's only a reflection of the fact that these gzeirahs are usually Rabbanan. Either because there are different explanations why that is. For example, the Shefter often explains that Chazal didn't make a gzeirah every time they got up in the morning. They only made a gzeirah when they felt it was what we call a sorah gadol, a major need to enact a gzeirah. So to protect the din in the Torah is a major need. To protect the din drabanan didn't qualify. So when we're dealing with drabanans, they wouldn't make the drabanan to protect the drabanan. But if all the gzeirahs that we're talking about here are deraisa, to say it doesn't apply, that's a very big shit. It's a very difficult comment to the Prima Gadim.
I'm sorry. I'm not sure how within the Torah itself you could have shear, and then half a shear, which is considered also to be over it. Because then if that's the case,
so why do you have
shear is not the shear, it's
right.
The half a shear.
So the answer to that is that the concept of chashi shear is derived from somewhere else in the Torah. Either it's from a separate pasuk, which is the one I quote, or it's a logical point, a svara, and the Gemara often treats the svara like a din d'oraisa. So basically the assumption is that every concept, every halakha has its own shear. So let's say each trace food has a concept of a kezayis. But the separate rule in the Torah, which says, which we consider to be a din d'oraisa, that any prohibited food, you can't have any of, even if it's less than a shear for punishment. So it's not that, for example, in traces you have two stages. The traces really has this rule of a kedayis, but there's an across-the-board rule of chashi shir that kicks in whenever you get involved in anything. And that apparently is a good method. That's how we just machlokes in the Gemara, but we pass it for a good method. So, as astonishing as the Prima Gadim is, and as we have a very difficult time understanding why he would say this, this could lead us to an interesting discussion. So what about a chashi shir of Batei B'chol? Why don't we say that if Bissel Batei B'chol is indeed a gzeirah, and less than a shir is a gzeirah also, so maybe we should say it's permissible to cook Batei B'chol when you're dealing with small amounts. I'll take a little Hershey's Kiss with milk, and a little crumb, a little bite of beef, and then cook them together. It's a double gzeirah.
I think there's probably other things as well.
Right.
To eat as well.
Well, so to eat would be mutter min ha-Torah, because the issur min ha-Torah only applies when there's an issur bissel min ha-Torah. You have to have all the elements together. It'd be an issur drabanan. The problem min ha-Torah is to be mutter. Just in drinking. Well, we're talking about the issur bissel here. We're not talking about the issur hana. Then we say the issur bissel was a gzeirah, and less than a shir is a gzeirah, so maybe it should be mutter to, right, just to cook. And again, the eating will be involved, so qualify cooking. So who discusses this independently? Prima Gadim. And the Prima Gadim seems to assume that it's also min ha-Torah to cook less than a shir of Batei B'chol. But what does that suggest? If you assume that Prince Adam holds from his same opinion that he says with by nausea, so apparently you have to come to the conclusion that the Prima Gaudium does not accept this term, this type of nisman. And he doesn't relate to Principal Buster the Fellows as the Dreyer, and he sees it as an independent concept. Just parenthetically, he also discusses on a different level that there's two ways to look at the concept of a Chatzis here when we talk about Principal Buster the Fellows. On the one hand, there's the normal quantitative Chatzis here that we talk about. Maybe it's small amounts of meat and milk. Or it could also be a qualitative chatzis. There's also an issue of quality in cooking. We know from Hilchos Shabbos, and we know from Hilchos Brachos B'Cholos, that if I put something in the oven for 5 minutes, that's non-accurate. A normal oven for 5 minutes, that's not necessarily called cooking. It's got to get to a certain point. So we know we have an expression in Halacha, Michael ben Jusai. And Jusai was a thief who was always on the run. He didn't have time to really let his food get cooked well. So as soon as it was at all edible, he pulled it out of the oven and he ran away. This is my focus, Rashi, in the Rambam, whether it means a halfway cooked or a third of the way cooked. But that's the expression we have in Halacha for the minimum that counts for some type of cooking, which we assume is much less than we would normally want, but it's what the lowest threshold for being acceptable. So let's say I were to take a lot of meat and a lot of milk and cook them together, but only for a very brief period of time, not in a way that they really get to the point where they're cooked. I put them in the oven for 5 minutes. So that, it sounds like Shemir Gadim is also out there, Midra Banim. You know, that's a type of qualitative chatzis here, which parenthetically he relates to differently. The notion that the shear itself, or the tzayis, by the way, which Achronim seem to take for granted to discuss in the Chazon Ish, but there's what's the question about that, is itself indicative. Because who says it should be a Kedayas? Kedayas is only a shear that's relevant to Eulis. Maybe I could have used a different shear. And I could have used the shear of Hagah, which is a monetary shear, like I said, with Putin. So the very fact that we use Kedayas, and again you could argue that seems to be the way we assume the Halakha, that we use Kedayas as a relevant shear for Buster B'Chol, already also indicates that perhaps eating is the controlling element. The Rambam has a famous comment that relates to this also, the Nekuda Nefla of the Rambam. So we assume that there is no, in order to have Buster B'Chol, the Kolofsky likes to tell the story, that when he was interviewed for Kolofsky, so he asked him the question, one question on the entrance subpoena, it's something like, if you go into Burger King and you order a cheeseburger, are you going to be in violation of Buster B'Chol of the Reis? It's much harder to violate Buster B'Chol of the Reis than you think. A lot of reasons why it's not so simple, you're going to get a real flat, typical Buster B'Chol. So among them, if you're dealing with pork, let's say, if you're dealing with a behemoth snare, so then there is no Buster B'Chol. There has to be a kosher animal. Now, what if it's a kosher animal but it wasn't tested properly? Let's say you go into a Burger King and you ask for a beef burger and beef. So then that's a discussion between the Rambam and Tosfos. And the Rambam says that there is no Buster B'Chol when the animal is a nevela, because of the concept that we have in Isser Chal HaIsser, that if something's already Isser, and then you want to create an Isser again on top of it, so normally that Isser does not take effect. So since it's already Isser anyway, this animal is just meat because it's a nevela, so it's not going to become Isser again from Buster B'Chol. Now there's a big problem with that, as the Rambam acknowledges, that normally a Isser Chal HaIsser doesn't apply if the new Isser is broader. If the new Isser is more expansive, so then we say the second Isser does kick in. So in this case, Buster B'Chol is a broader Isser than Nevela. Nevela is only Isser Da'Achila. The Torah is very explicit that you're allowed to go Hanach from the Nevela. The Torah says you can throw Nevela to the dogs, to your own dogs, you can feed your animals with Nevela. The Torah is explicit, you're allowed to go Hanach from the Nevela. So therefore, the Isser Buster B'Chol is being more expansive. Should be chal on top of nevela. So why is it not? That's what the Rambam says. Here I'm going to tell you my nekuda neflah, my outstanding point here, the great chap, that even though Boston Buffalo has all these aspects to it, these broader elements to it than the Vela does, nonetheless, in its essence, it's an Isra Achila. It's defined by its Achila character, and everything else comes out of that. It's an interesting Kiddush. So therefore, we define it as primarily an Isra Achila. So the Isra Achila of Boston Buffalo cannot be found on the Isra Achila of the Vela. And we don't look at the fact that it has all these other things to it. Very interesting concept. Now we talk about Bissel Bas B'Chalos, so we know the other famous Bissel that we have is Bissel on Shabbos. So it's interesting to look at some possible comparisons between Bissel on Shabbos and Bissel Bas B'Chalos. I think we do. I think we do. Right, so that couldn't be the case. Well, I'm not 100% sure that's how we pass in this. Let's hold off on that. There are a couple of other issues that we'll get to right now. For example, there is the issue that we're familiar with in Hilchos Shabbos of Ein Bissel after Bissel. So many posts can hold that if you have a Bassel B'Challah that was already cooked once and you want to cook it again, so that's not a problem. That is Ein Bissel after Bissel, you can't cook it twice. In other words, you can cook it twice because the second time is not called cooking again. So the Kiddush Eger is produced from the Shulchan Aruch. He says that if you have Basar B'Challah that were pickled together, covered, so that has a Drabanan type of Basar B'Challah. He says, therefore, now it's also for you to cook it because the previous cooking was only a Drabanan. In other words, the implication being that had the first time been a real cooking Minat Torah, so there would be no issue to cook it again.
And then the cheese is added on.
So that's the question. So first, there's two different features here. One feature is that this is cooked already together, there's no way for this to cook it again. Now, as we'll also get to in a second, there is another feature that is less widely held, that even if the elements are cooked separately first, so there's no way for to cook them again. You can't cook them twice, even if the first time they were cooked separately. If that's true, this is part of the entrance between the question, it would be very difficult to have Bassel B'Challah in America as mine as that, because all milk that we've come in contact with has been pasteurized, has gone through a cooking process, so it may effectively knock that out, possibly. But in any case, so how does that compare to Hilchos Shabbos? When it comes to Hilchos Shabbos, so what's the rule? And this lacha bissel or yesh bissel lacha bissel? It's a hard question to answer because we know it depends on whether we're talking about solid food or liquid food. As a solid food, we say ein bissel lacha bissel. You can't cook it again once it's already been cooked. But you have hot water that's been cooked, so once it comes cold, so it cancels out. So then there is bissel lacha bissel, but cooked the second time is the same thing as cooking it the first time. So what's the control and what's the exception? So some assume that really the rule is that yeast is lacha bissel and solid food is the exception. So then the question is, why is it different? So how come when it comes to Bassel B'Challah, we'll say ein bissel lacha bissel, and when it comes to Shabbos, we say yeast bissel lacha bissel? So some Achronim suggest that it could be there's a crucial difference between bissel on Shabbos and bissel Bassel B'Challah. That maybe when it comes to bissel Bassel B'Challah, the issue is really because we don't want to create this substance that we're afraid to eat. So once it's created, you're not doing anything new by cooking it again. It's not that we don't want you to put this in fire. We don't want you to create it. So once it's created, you're not adding anything by doing it again. While when it comes to Shabbos, we're interested in Malacha. We're interested in you're doing a labor. So if you're doing this action, as long as it's somehow relevant, if it's a useless action, then it's not going to count. But as long as it's somehow relevant, so then that's going to be something significant. Along similar lines, the Gemara in Chulin contrasts Shabbos and Bassel B'Challah. And the Gemara, Tosfos asks about this contrast, Tosfos there in Chulin Baskos Yudalek, that when it comes to Bassel B'Challah, so here we have something which the Gemara to do, and the product is offered to eat. When it comes to Shabbos, that's not the case. Because when it comes to Shabbos, I will say there is an issue in Maaseh Shabbos. That's an issue of the Rabbanim. The Gemara actually learns from the Pasuk that there is no issue in the Hatorah on the product of Malacha. If you cook food on Shabbos, so Halacha Maaseh, we don't allow you to eat it, but in the Hatorah, it's Mutter. So that distinction also could be related to this, that really, when it comes to Shabbos, the issue is the action. And therefore, it doesn't really affect the product on a derisa level. But when it comes to Basi B'chavos, so the issue is the product. And once the product is there, so of course it's going to be prohibited. Another perhaps relevant point has to do with the din of Shnayim Shasau, that we have a concept, at least in Halacha Shabbos, that if you have a melacha that should be done by one person, and it's being done by two people, so that's pasul min ha'Torah. If you have two people walking outside without maybe carrying a shidduch, so they're both pasul for that. If they're carrying a sofa, so that's normally a two-person job, at least. So that's not that's considered normal. That's they're still both carrying. But if it's something that they should be able to carry by themselves, each one, and each one is really therefore not actually carrying because they're doing it in an artificial way, so that's the Gemara says in Shabbos, and that's Sadi Beis and Sadi Gimel, that that's a pure science of, so that's an artificially being done by two people when it should be being done by one. In general, it's a question whether that's a Shabbos din or whether it's a din by Kalatara Kula, whether that applies to other things. The Rishon Engel has a Tshuva Zatish and his Tshuva and Torah. But the Mishnah and others discuss, so what should the din be by Basu B'Chalo? So if Basu B'Chalo that was created by two people together, so do we create this exemption of Shnayim Shasau? So some Achronim suggest the same point. That when it comes to Shabbos, we're interested in Malacha, we're interested in you're not doing an action. So here, the action is compromised because two people are doing it, it's unnatural. So therefore, that creates an exemption. But when it comes to Basu B'Chalo, maybe we're really concerned about the product. And therefore, if you're bringing about this product, even if you're doing it in a way that your action is compromised, the Maaseh is bringing about this product, so that is in itself a problem. Let's go back a little bit to a point we started earlier. Here's a very interesting fact of the Rambam, a very controversial statement of the Rambam. That we know that we assume that chicken is prohibited to be mixed with milk. On a level, midrabanan. Chicken's not called meat, but we treat it like meat, midrabanan. Not everyone agree with this, but just the idea that the Gemara says he would eat, he passed him the chicken with mutter, and his community, they would have chicken and milk, that was the way he held. But our practice was not as bad that we relate to chicken as meat rabbanan. Now the Rambam has a very controversial ruling, where the Rambam says that it's also to eat chicken and milk, but to cook it is mutter. It's controversial for a couple of reasons. One reason that's hard to answer is that it seems to be against the Mishnah. The first Mishnah in Kol HaBasa, so the parasha talks about Basa B'Chalo, so it starts off saying, Kol HaBasa, also Levasa B'Chalo. You're not allowed to cook any meat with milk. And the Gemara says, what is this expression of Kol, of any meat? The Gemara says, it means to include any, even rabbinically prohibited meat, such as chicken. So if that's the case, the Mishnah is really almost saying explicitly, you're not allowed to cook chicken and milk. So how the Rambam deals with that is not my question. But beyond that, so even if you're not worried about that, so other Achronim ask, so we normally assume that when the rabbis make a gzera, so they try to closely match the existing deraisa din that's relevant. They're called the Tukim Rabbanan, change deraisa Tukim. That they try to follow and pattern themselves after existing din in the Torah. So if chicken is meant to match meat, and meat has these relevant prohibitions, so why would we not say that chicken is treated exactly like meat on a level mid rabbanan? Please, take a stab. Go for it. Stab away. Just take
an example. The raisa is an animal in mother's milk.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't apply with chicken.
See, that's an interesting point. Some suggest it was...
It's not a category altogether.
Yeah, I'll tell you, some actually suggest, and along those lines, that since the Gemara tells us that Gedi specifically means a cow, specifically means, you know, an animal or pet. So, therefore, it's as if the Torah is saying that chicken is not included. It's explicitly saying we're not talking about chicken. And there is a position of the Taz, I wasn't even going to talk about this, but it's relevant to your suggestion, that the Taz says that when the Torah specifically permits something, so the rabbis couldn't come and prohibit it. They only prohibit things that aren't covered in the Torah. If the Torah specifically says it's mutter, so then the rabbis don't prohibit it. So someone has suggested, because I'm so like this, that maybe if the Torah says the issue is explicitly only talking about animals and not chickens, so then the pasuk uses the word bissel, so maybe the rabbis couldn't create an issue on the bissel because that was explicitly in the Torah. They could only prohibit eating, maybe. It's an interesting suggestion. But I thought maybe based on what we've been saying before, maybe you could say that the reason the Rambam didn't want to prohibit cooking chicken is because chicken is a gezeira for meat, and cooking maybe is a gezeira for eating. So maybe the Rambam was worried it's a gezeira of a gezeira. And I should point out that you don't have to, even though we said before the prima donna was difficult to combine, to apply the rule of gezeira of a gezeira to a doraisa is a big critic. You don't have to come on to the whole prima donna here. And the prima donna was saying that even the Torah wouldn't put a gezeira on top of a gezeira. Here we don't have to go so far, we don't have to go halfway. Only have to say that maybe the rabbis wouldn't make a gezeira on a din d'oraisa that they perceive to itself be a gezeira. So that if they perceived cooking to be a gezeira, they wouldn't ask for cooking chicken as a gezeira for cooking meat, because they wouldn't add on a gezeira to something that was conceptually a gezeira itself. Because also a fetish is not as big a fetish as the prima donna, and we're applying it to restricting the power of the Torah itself. Okay, a couple of other interesting shalos that come up, just to mention maybe two, and then maybe we'll wrap it up. Two shalos close being discussed that touch upon this question of can we apply this gezeira concept as an issue that has ramifications. So in Hilchos Chanukah it comes up. How does it come up in Hilchos Chanukah? Ephraim and others talk about the question of, let's say you have a candle that's made out of Sos B'Chol. So lighting that candle would then proceed to cook the candle. So can you use that candle for an Erev Chanukah? All kinds of interesting bonus come in once you say it's Chanukah. Maybe that's not called Hana, and this is Rav Lehenis Midnah. So maybe it's mutter anyway, even if that was a out-and-out Hana Bas Chol, maybe it's mutter for a mitzvah. But the question really is going around this issue that by the time you finish the process, it's not going to be there anymore. You're not going to have this candle anymore. It's going to melt. So there's no risk you're going to eat it. So maybe we should say it's permitted. That's something post can discuss, which is relevant to this question. Another issue that's relevant to Rosh Hashanah by the Shabbat Rav, we mentioned earlier, his brother, Chazan Nachum, but the Shabbat Rav does Nesarim, discusses the question, must say I have a laboratory. And my laboratory is a Kashrut laboratory. It's devoted to identifying and eliminating Basar B'Chol. So I have a way to test food to see if it's Basar B'Chol. What's the problem? The test itself is an act of bissel. I hold it up to a flame, and through this test I will be cooking the item. So can I cook the item in order to test if it's bissel, if it's Basar B'Chol, so that I'll stay away from it? So here normally we're afraid of bissel because you're going to come to eat it. Here the whole point of your bissel is that you shouldn't come to eat it. So perhaps we should be mindful on such a thing. So that's a possibility. And then I saw also that in one of the basic book journals, I think it was Shechner, an article quoted from the Moshe Soloveitchik, that he had addressed this issue, and he also thought once you make it, he had a different Rambam. He didn't come from the Kesher Mishnah. He pointed out another language of the Rambam where it sounds like the Rambam is saying this point that Bissel was really a shad, and that therefore maybe one could perceive in the words of the Rambam that if the purpose of the Bissel that you're doing is in order to ascertain that it's possible to call it and stay away from it, so maybe that should be Muslim. And again, there were those who would dismiss this whole conversation, right, and say you have no right to say an afternoon is in this case. Other related cases, for whatever reason, it's not going to be Roy Lachula, whatever you're creating, she's the maker, or she takes that Frank to conclude about this, and she says she's close to the discussion members. So there is some discussion. Do we have the right to assume any nafkaminas? Do we have the right to say, well, I perceive this to be a shiad, and therefore that affects the halacha, so that word goes like the Chazan Nachum said, no, there's no such right? But on the other hand, you saw many discussions in Kosin tonight that at least consider the possibility, and you find this by some of the other shiads that write the concepts. You mentioned last year, we talked about Chachishir. There were quite a few very major Achronim who felt that we could be Nato on Chachishir in certain cases where we felt the shiad didn't apply. Among them, the Kizager, the Behuda, the Chassan Sofer, the biggest Achronim that we have, the Gdalia, four of the biggest Achronim seem to assume that in Hukos Chachishir, if there was no fear of finishing the fear, to be mutter. They were all discussing the Rambam, but the Rambam had said, well, Chazar's master, the Rambam had said that you're not allowed to have a Chachishir of Chamei from Pesach, but that we understand is an Issa Chachishir in general, but the Rambam had his own pasuk. So as if it's a separate din. So why does he have his own pasuk? So those four Achronim, the Kizegim, the Yehudah, from Sof, Shabtai, they all suggest that maybe the Issa Chachishir that normally applies is the Gezerah, and we're afraid you're going to finish the whole thing. So how would you know that Chameis in the last few minutes of Pesach is prohibited when you don't have time to finish the whole seer? Maybe at that time it'll be permitted. At any time when you don't have the ability to finish the whole seer, it'll be permitted. So therefore, the Rambam quotes to another pasuk that could tell you that Chameis is always prohibited in any quantity, no matter what, not only because of Chachishir, but because of some detail in Chameis itself. So there are many major Achronim who seem to be willing to follow a Gezeira theory and assume nafkaminas. And then again, there are others who aren't so willing, and that's a position we can understand as well. Okay, so just to review what we spoke about, so we mentioned the fact that there are three times in the Torah this issue of both class of disease, and the Gemara tells us that this means there are three prohibitions: you shouldn't cook, you shouldn't eat, you shouldn't get hana, and the Tesef Mishnah. And apparently the Rambam can interpret this way as well, tells us that perhaps this was really a shiad for Achila, although those who say the opposite, the Gemara seems to suggest that Basra B'chol of itself is a Tereza, and that therefore, once we have a Tereza, we shouldn't eat it, that's controlling the issue really being the Bissel, not the Achila. So we discussed possible ramifications, and mentioned the Sechem, of course, this idea that maybe somebody who's cooking somebody else's Basra B'chol should be allowed to do it, he's not going to be allowed to taste it. And then we discussed the whole concept of Gezeira, that the Kumagadim says that a Nazir is allowed to have a Chachishir of grapes, because grapes is a Gezeira for wine, and a Chachishir is a Gezeira for a whole shear, so Ein Gozer and Gezeira. We discussed the difficult position, but nonetheless that's what he seems to assume. So one could say that maybe he would also tell us that we could cook Bas B'chala Bas in a shear, because that should also be a Gezeira with Gezeira. So we see the Kumagadim himself doesn't say that, apparently, implying that he doesn't recognize Bas B'chala Bissel as a Gezeira. And then we discussed the difference between qualitative and quantitative Bissel Bas B'chala, that we could be talking about too small an amount, or we could be talking about cooking less than a Machal Ben Gezeira. And then we talked about the whole fact of the shear being a Kizaya as opposed to other types of measurements that we had, which seem to indicate that maybe we are coming from a eating source as the controlling point, which is reflected in the Rambam in the Kudin of Law also, and the Rambam says that a Tresla doesn't have a din of, and a Vela doesn't have a din of Bas B'chalav, because a Nisra Chal Isra, the Isra Bas B'chalav can't be called a Vela, even though it's a more expansive Isra, but really we view it like an Isra Achila. And then we talked a little bit about some other things we talked about, Shlain Shlaso, and in Bissel Achabissel, that when it comes to Bas B'chol, many Achronim maintain the in Bissel Achabissel, some reason maintain that even if it was cooked separately in Bissel Achabissel. So we ask if the rule is in Bissel Achabissel on Shabbos, which is a hard statement to say for sure, because we could go either way, to the exception. If we assume that's it, so why is there a difference? So discuss the Shabbos is about the Malacha, while Bas B'chol is about creating this Isser, and therefore it has a different policy, which affects also the fact that Menhat Torah makes the Shabbos is Mutter, while Bas B'chol is also Menhat Torah to eat. And we discussed that may affect the question of Shnayim Shlaso. It's clear that normally applies not to Shabbos, but many Achronim for us didn't apply to Bas B'chol, maybe because again the issue is the product, not the Maisa, when it comes to Shabbos, so the issue is the Maisa. And we discussed the fact that Rambam says that cooking chicken and milk is mercury. We discussed a little bit why should that be, why first of all forget the missing, we're not able to answer that, but also why about the fact that it normally for a pot in there you put in after you put them in the program. We discussed the possibility that maybe the program explicitly is permitting cooking chicken and milk and maybe we can't therefore after it. We discussed another suggestion that maybe Ann goes in Xavier with Xavier, that maybe cooking is Xavier and chicken is Xavier when you combine the two, and that's not as much of a fit as the Prima Gladden because we're talking about creating a Drabbanan Xavier on top of a Zerais Xavier. And then we talked about some of the other questions of situations where you're cooking Basil Chalos that maybe you could reasonably assume it's not going to lead to eating, such as the question folks can talk about a Hanukkah candle if made of the Basil Chalos, or the question that's been a rather remote already dealt with about testing something to see if it's Basil Chalos through a process of ritual, or if something for whatever reason is not going to be Roy Lachilo. All of these cases is that perhaps something to make, and again, the whole topic, the whole discussion is one that's really subject to a conceptual machlokes ha'achronim. If you assume that something is a gerer, so can you make any nafkaminas based on that, which we saw many very big achronim were ready to do in this case and in other cases, or as we say, kechazon nacham says, which also seems to have a lot of logical appeal, that at the end of the day, it's an issue of the right, so we have no right to say, well, our understanding of it as a gerer should allow us to make nafkaminas. Okay, so let's stop there. Hi. No, there's no onus. That's the distinction. That shear is for onus, and less than a shear is also in the hatorah, we assume. So the difference is only the onus. You still get it in the right. There's no onus at all for it. And is there any kapara at all on any level? That's a more subtle discussion. But strictly speaking, you're off the hook. That's really what the issue is. Okay, so we'll figure out. I'll try to go through and see what topics we did already. Try to cross them off the agenda. If anybody has any particular requests, any particular topics you would like to see on the agenda, please feel free to bring them forward. And I guess we're up next Tuesday. Okay, have a wonderful week.